going on? Jermaine Johnson. Tune in to Turn on the Jets podcast.
Hey, this is Vinny Pasquantino of the Kansas City Royals. Make sure you tune into the Turn on the Jets podcast.
Everybody, welcome back to the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPaul11 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Wednesday episode edition. Obviously, make sure you guys check out the episode yesterday with my brother, Charlie, talking all things Jets offseason, owners meeting. Joined by special guest, I want to say third or fourth time on the pod now, Over the Cap, Pro Football Focus. I guess what does he do at this point? Brad Spielberger. Brad, how are we doing today, man?
I'm doing great. Yeah, thanks for having me back. I think it is fourth time. Dude,
it might be a record
to be a repeat guest.
Yeah, it might be a record. I think Joe and Connor have done a couple times, but I think might be pushing the record here. You passed Bryce Huff, so you should get an extension as well. Look, obviously, there's so much going on. There's a lot of different things to tackle. Let's start with the Elijah Moore trade, just because obviously he was the biggest news of last week. He's one of the bigger names that honestly has probably been dealt this offseason via trade. We've expected DeAndre Hopkins, people throughout Mike Evans. Elijah Moore is one of the guys that has actually gotten moved. What'd you make of the trade in general? And I kind of want to have a conversation just a little bit about the big picture on why the trade does make sense, although, in my opinion, the value wasn't particularly awesome.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, when you put in a trade request as a second-year player, that is going to ruffle a lot of feathers. Yes, we've seen guys like Debo going into a contract year do that and still stay in San Fran. When you are early into your second season, it's not going to say it's a guarantee to get traded. Obviously, Denzel Mims has been trying to get moved for a very long time at this point. But if you do retain value and other teams may be interested – and the funny thing, of course, is now you bring in Aaron Rodgers, who probably wouldn't mind playing with Aaron Rodgers, but now you're getting shipped out. So, look, I think he's a good player. I think you would agree. I think he showed a lot of flashes as a rookie. He can separate very well. You can play him outside. I think, kind of gets made too much. He's just a slot. I don't think he's just a slot. But nevertheless, the thing with the trade is, look, getting a second-round pick is awesome. I'm sure they were asking for probably a third by itself was the highest they realistically thought they could get. And so getting a second is great. I think the conversation, some of the things that Jason and I talk about, and this isn't even tied to Jason and I's draft pick chart. It's kind of ignoring that. I know I put out like the difference between the two picks for us is very late. That's not even the point. And the bigger point is I think some smarter teams have realized like either I could give the Jets just a third by itself, maybe give them a third, get back a fifth, whatever. Or I can actually offer them a higher pick, but still get back a top 75 pick in return. And I think that you're kind of playing the law of averages and the probabilities there. Yes, you're more likely to find a dynamic, really good player at 43 or 42, whatever it is, than you are 74. But I think that has kind of an angle. And the last thing I said was, look, if Joe Douglas, if you want to say he's good at one thing, it is trading players. So let's not, knock him and say he's not good at that. But I just think it was a smart kind of maneuver from Cleveland. He fits perfectly in their offense. But look, the Jets have, Garrett Wilson, now Alan Lazard. I think now Lazard is 100% going to be the big slot, and it makes sense for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, look, I mentioned a couple of days ago, and I kind of was talking about it on a different show last night, that the issue for the Jets is that Elijah Moore, yes, he is kind of primarily going to become a slot guy, and he can play outside, but we saw last year when he played outside, he didn't get the ball quite as much. That caused, obviously, problems. The Jets patched it up, and apparently the Browns had called on Elijah after he made the trade request a year ago. To win it by 30 points on a 3 or 4 game win streak, and, you request a trade, it comes off the wrong way. I think Connor Rogers mentioned it. The Jets, based on the history of Elijah Moore's agent, the Jets would have had to pay him after this year, going to year 4 because he's a second-round pick. I don't know how that would have happened. There's all these different factors there. The Jets, the biggest picture is the Jets needed that second round pick, knowing one of those is going to probably go for Aaron Rodgers. Maybe Joe Douglas fleeces the Packers, and it's really not even a second round pick this year, which apparently the offer started at a 4, which is objectively hilarious. That said, the Jets need to fill holes at center. There's probably a hole at tackle. You can make the argument there's not, but they need to tackle long-term. Dwayne Brown's going to play at max a year. They have obviously a whole interior defensive line, which we'll get to, and safety. Having two top 43 picks and still getting Aaron Rodgers is the goal. And unfortunately for the Jets, all the young guys, he was the most expendable. He has more value than a Michael Carter or other guys that are kind of in that RB2, wide receiver 2 range. And, Corey Davis might have value. Maybe he goes to the Packers in this deal, but Corey Davis's value is not a second round pick, so or a third. So it's not ideal. Again, you took the guy 34th overall 24 months ago. He's going to make $1 million this year. He's 22 years old. He's homegrown. Like, you'd like to keep that guy. That said, if you're going to backfill him with an Odell Beckham, which we'll get to, or someone of the sort, it's probably a net even in terms of production. Maybe Elijah's maybe a little better at this point, but you're getting Aaron Rodgers for basically Elijah Moore in a third round pick, if you want to look at it that way, which is pretty good. It's more just funny to me that everyone just assumed Elijah would be in the Packers trade, and he was traded within 35 minutes of signing Mecole Hardman. I want to kind of get your opinion on, there's two other trades and signings they've made that it's kind of not the Lazard move as much. I think the Lazard move makes sense, but it also has to do with Hackett, Rodgers. I think there's a little bit of a, you know, it's one or the other. Mecole Hardman and Chuck Clark are two names that they're not going to get the buzz, and they're not going to make the Jets, you know, go from 7 wins to 12 wins. But they are guys that want to make a playoff run. You need guys that are durable or guys that are explosive. Did you like those two moves? Because I feel like we're talking so much about Odell and Ben Jones, and it's like Mecole Hardman's a second round pick 3 or 4 years ago, and he wasn't a bust. It just, he got hurt last year, and Chuck Clark plays every single snap, and the Jets cannot say that at the safety position.
I love the Clark move. I mean, trading basically nothing for a guy that, look, not only plays every snap, I mean, last year was basically supposed to get benched for Marcus Williams. Then, of course, they draft Kyle Hamilton. Obviously, the Ravens use a lot of three safety looks and big nickel, big dime. They do a lot of stuff, obviously, with a bunch of DBs on the field. But yeah, a great move. A guy you can move all over. Like, I think Jordan Whitehead is a, you know, a flexible player, but to me, he is a guy you want in the box more often than not. You know, his average depth of tackle is one of the lowest in the NFL among safeties. He's making plays near the line of scrimmage. Like, that is his skill set. And so I think Clark is a bit more versatile. I loved that move. Hardman too, look. I mean, yeah, like you said, recent second round pick that has that speed. I mean, the jet sweep comment was hilarious. And he obviously responded to Schefter saying it's gonna be more than jet sweeps. Obviously, Schefter was trying to make a dumb play on words with the New York Jets, but like, you know, look, a 1 year flyer for him with a base value about $4 million, which is what it is. Yeah. All day long. I'm fine with that. There were rumblings he was going to get like a pretty good deal. And
there
was
like $11 million out there at one point. I was like, I don't think they'll be in that market.
People I respect and trust too, you know, were saying that, like, because, you know, you do start to learn in my business with the free agency stuff. You start to learn who's blowing smoke and who actually is like kind of, you know, giving you stuff that they've heard from credible, you know, team sources. So I heard that when people like that generally are accurate, or, you know, and again, they weren't telling me it's a definitive, but they were saying, I've heard this from people I trust. So with that, you know, knowledge as well, waiting the market out, being patient, letting all these receivers not do very well, and then getting him on a 1 year flyer, he just adds a different element. You still have a guy to top off the defense. You do right now, if you also lose Corey Davis, you still have three receiver set of solid NFL players. So yeah, I agree with you. Like, we shouldn't gloss over these two small moves. These are the moves, you know, that actually kind of make an impact in free agency. It's not always about the giant splashes.
Yeah. It's that middle of the rosters where the Jets have struggled. The Jets for a long time had only middle of the roster guys through a lot of the 2000s. The 2010s, which is why they struggled. You didn't have those elite playmakers. Now they have five or six like true blue chip Pro Bowl, all pro level guys. They're all like 23, 24 years old. Obviously CJ Mosley's the kind of outlier there, but now it's like the middle of the roster needs to be worked on. That's what happens when you miss on some of these second, third, and fourth round picks. I kind of wanted to get to a couple of different names here. Obviously the Jets are kind of either involved in or not, but I want to just start with Quinton Williams quickly. Obviously we probably were on the pod maybe, I don't know, before the combine and Senior Bowl and stuff, and we were talking about Quinton Williams' extension. I don't think anything's changed there. If anything, it's just like a foregone conclusion it's going to get done, which is a little weird just because I don't think anyone's used to that. Like, every other team, when this happens, it just feels like Quinton's not going anywhere unless something crazy happens. But has your mind changed at all on what he might get or what we're looking at just with the Deron Payne move, him obviously getting extended first? I was hoping the Jets would – smart business would beat anyone else to the market, but I Quinton Williams is a better player than Deron Payne, so I don't think it's more of beating Jeffrey Simmons, Dexter Lawrence to the market. So how do you think that works out? Because obviously Quincy got paid. They wouldn't have paid Quincy, I don't think, if Quinton's not next.
I agree. I do think the Quincy was like a classic Marcus Markeith Morris situation. If only Quinnen would take a discount, but I don't know if that's going to be the case. But yeah, it's funny because I probably came on this show, maybe even defended my position, where last year around this time, I projected a bunch of those guys' extensions, and I had it at 5 years, $105 million. And a lot of Jets Twitter thought I was crazy. The Jets would sign a contract for 5 years, $105 million on Quinnen yesterday if they could. I think it's going to be over $25 million a year. I really do. Because you mentioned, look, the Daron Payne contract is a signal, 4 years, 90, 22 and a half. But then also, and these guys aren't like necessarily comps, but when you see Draymond Jones and Zach Allen and all these other guys, even David Onyemata and Dalvin Tomlinson, like everyone in that position did so well. It's because they know where the market is going, because the guys you mentioned, Jeffrey Simmons, Quinnen Williams, and Dexter Lawrence. So yeah, look, I'm sure the Jets are being proactive, trying to get it done early. But again, the agent also knows, like, you're not going to get a massive discount. You'll get a small discount. By, you know, first to market. But yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be 4 years, $100 million in that range.
Yeah, I think that it's also, I'm curious your thoughts on this. We were talking about this, I started this with a couple of people earlier. The Odell move, Ben Jones potentially, I thought Calais Campbell fit in this bucket. Obviously, he ended up taking the Falcons offer, which makes no sense, but whatever. And then obviously the Rodgers and the Quinnen Williams extension. It all kind of feels to me like once Rodgers gets announced, we get like a flurry of like four Jets Schefter Rappaport notifications in like a 30-minute window where Quinn's extension, how they fit, you know, what do they have to make his cap number this year versus how much do they backload it? What's Odell's number come in at? What's like, it feels like all these are just like a domino waiting to fall. Is that a crazy thought that Quinn's extension could be kind of hinged upon what Rodgers' new number may look like?
Fair question. So the thing there is, because you already have the fifth year option on the books at $9.5 million, like you probably could keep his cap number close to that. Even I know it sounds crazy to say 4 year 100 and keep his cap number at 10, but that's what we see. Maybe it goes up a little bit. So from a cap standpoint, you're probably fine there. And then I think you do, unfortunately, with all the little 1 year deals you're mentioning, they're going to be full of void years, right? So you're giving, I think Odell's going to sign for like 1 year, like $6 million. Like, I don't think he's going to get the value he's looking for. And you realistically keep his cap hit in the first year at like $1.5 million and just push everything else down the line. Same with the Ben Jones. If he wants to keep playing football, give him a 1 year, $6 or $7 million and maybe even less than that, and just, you know, prorate it. But I think it's a good point, though. I do think once that happens, it's going to be a catalyst for a bunch of things. And I saw this morning too, I don't know if it's true yet, but Corey Davis, if he's not part of the Packers trade, I don't know if he has a place on the roster at that point. If he's not, I mean, $10.5 million for him going to the last year of his deal. You touched on it earlier. There's not a lot of trade value there. It's kind of like a fifth or sixth round pick, frankly, in my opinion, unless the team gets an extension done as a part of the trade. So, Dwayne Brown, you mentioned, is kind of becomes an interesting one as well. And then Carl Lawson, of course, is interesting, you know, with $15 million potential clearing as well.
Yeah, it'd be interesting, I think. I'd like to see what they do with Lawson in terms of, do they extend him and make it like 2 for $20 and add some, he's no guaranteed money left. So do they try to guarantee some money, some injury protections, things of that sort to lower his number? Cause I think he's a good player. The Jets love him, but at $15 million, I'm not sure 7 sacks a year is going to get you $15 million. Maybe, sure. Maybe on the open market, I'm sure he'd be a hotly contested name. I just think there is the injury history there, and he wasn't amazing last year. It was good, like he had some nice moments, but they played a lot of backup tackles on his side, and I felt like other guys ate a little bit more than he did. The Corey Davis thing, yeah, they could clear a ton of money. Corey's like, if he stays around, he's your wide receiver 4 or 5, it seems like, at this point. And you're not paying Corey Davis $12-13 million a year to be wide receiver 4 or 5. So I think he's either in the Packers trade or he's another classic, but they do a Crowder, you're like, take a pay cut. Yep. or we're gonna cut you. They didn't extend the Mosley contract's weird. I know it's like the more you have to push it out, you're eventually gonna have to pay. His cap number is just gonna keep ballooning more down the line. You think that they're just kind of waiting, similar with him, just like, we really don't want to have to do this, but if we do, if we need to clear space, like that's what it feels like with CJ, where it's like, great player, still really good, but the longer we have to pay him $28 million a year, like the worse it's gonna get.
100%. And you saw some of the restructures they've already done. And I think Jason Fitzgerald touched on this. Like, they're not max restructures. They're like smaller restructures to fit some moves. And you're still kind of biding your time before Rodgers gets there. And then maybe, yeah, like if you do, I mean, you can clear $12 million with a Mosley restructure. But so let's say you clear half of that instead and just do enough to stay above water. Yeah, I think they are trying to keep those bigger ones for those older players. Kind of don't do those as long as possible. And then if it gets there, it gets there. But I think a great point on the pay cut, and Douglas has been great at this, and lost. Is a perfect example. Say, look, I do think he would get attraction. I mean, I'm a Bears fan. I want him to be a Chicago Bear if he's cut. But like, if he, they say, look, it's now April or May, whatever. We chop your 15 and a half, but we guarantee the entire 7.5. We throw a bunch of incentives in there. We convert a bunch to a bonus and spread it over the cap. You know, like he'd probably go for that and say, all right, it's a 1 year flyer and you hit the market again. You're not going to beat this number. Like that's smart business.
Yeah. It's just interesting to see how they're going to manipulate things here. I guess the last kind of question, you know, you mentioned Odell and things like that. The Rodgers thing is weird because, again, we can walk through the contract on how it's not $60 million on the cap. It's $60 million on the, like, what the Jets have to sign, basically a $59 million check. I think his game salary is like $1.1 million, if I'm not mistaken, if traded. But it seems like his contract's going to get reworked, whether he's not staying in Green Bay, but theoretically if he did, or if he gets traded. Why would the, I guess it's a more of an overarching question. If his cap number is only going to be 15.4, whatever it is, why would they even rework the deal? Is it because it may try to get him guaranteed for a second year? Like, what's the incentive if you're trading for him and his cap number is so low for a quarterback? I guess that's where my confusion is. Why would you want to rework it, or does he want to rework the deal?
Yeah, I think honestly they might. It's more from a cash thing, like you're saying. Like, obviously he's not going to take less cash, but you could, in theory, do something like, hey, we saw this with Jason Kelsey and Bobby Wagner, for example. Hey, we'll give you a fully guaranteed roster bonus in 2024 that you're going to earn no matter what, but we'll just push that money into that amount. And then if you retire or whatever, we'll still, you know, we'll give it to you still. Technically, they could not, but they would obviously put in language like, even if he retires, he's still going to give this money, or they would convert it back to a bonus before he, you know, all sorts of things. But essentially, I think it's more just giving you $60 million in cash. You know, like you said, 58.3 of that is an option bonus that I'm sure there's two paydays it's split out over, but like you're paying that money before the first week even hits. So yeah, it's more just like how you pay the cash out, stuff like that. Like you're saying, the cap was set up perfectly. It'd be about $15.8 million, I think it is. You know, but also say this too, maybe you want to prorate less, right? Because also maybe you're saying, okay, this is going to be a 1 year thing. Sure, we're still going to prorate a lot of it, but how about we make his 2023 cap hit like $10 million instead of, you know, or like $10 million salary, excuse me, on top of, you know, the option bonus. So that way we're not sitting with a $45 million dead cap hit in 2024 when he retires. So there's a whole different things there. But yeah, more cash than anything.
You think he only plays 1 year? I feel like it's going to be a 2 year thing. It just, I don't know. Rodgers just likes the, I don't believe for a second 90% retired, I think it was total bullshit. I think it was literally clearly leveraged from him. And it worked. Apparently, it literally worked, if you believe the Charles Robinson article. Apparently, the Packers like panicked after that, and the price went down. Good on Rodgers. I feel like there's no way him and Douglas are not talking of, like, you know, obviously through other channels of, like.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Dude, I'm going to literally just hammer the Packers here. Like, hold your ground. Do not give up more. Like, that's what it feels like. I think at first everyone's like, oh, shit, we're getting a guy who doesn't really love football anymore. Dude, 2 weeks before that that came out, before Into the Darkness, he was on McAfee and was like, my competitive drive has never been stronger. I feel amazing. And then all of a sudden it was like, maybe I might retire, which to me signals I want to make sure I get it my way and the Jets don't get screwed here trading for me.
I agree with you 110%. First, I mean, I think Charles is someone who puts out consistently good information, doesn't really get lost in the silly business. But also, yeah, like, and I said this, people kind of jumped out my throat. Like, the Jets, I get why they're not saying anything. If I was the Jets, I respect Joe Douglas, and clearly it's good business. But, like, I would be like, yeah, look, Lamar's a good player. We'll look into it. Like, I would be using every, you know, avenue at my disposal. But maybe that's why he's not doing it, because he's saying, I already have them, you know, bent over a barrel because you have Rodgers saying these things. And, and we know they want to move on and yada, yada, yada. Yeah, I don't buy it either. The 90% thing I think is bogus. Look, I'm sure he considered it. I was told by someone I trust, you know, again, no one's close to Rodgers, but like, hey, like someone said to me a couple months ago, like, it's more possible than I think people are making it out to be, but that is a lot less strong than 90% for sure.
Yeah, no, he said earlier in training camp this year, he planned on playing 3 or 4 more years. So, and like, I just, a lot of this to me screams like he's very, very spiteful. And I think the Jets are also conscious of that, of like, he said yes, but like, we don't technically have this guy. We have to like be very careful of not getting involved in the insider realm, leaking information. I think that's why everyone hates when I say this, like the Jets are buttoned up, but they were not that buttoned up the last couple of years. They are very buttoned up this offseason. And I think it's very much to do with Aaron Rodgers. And just, we got to make sure we get this guy and make sure this gets, you know, over the deadline. What do you think this gets done? Because I know, obviously, we're all kind of guessing at this point, right? I think the draft is a pretty clear deadline, but I know it's the most beneficial for the Packers money-wise is post-June 1, based on dead cap, if I'm not mistaken. But then they would lose that 2023 asset, and that just, there's no way that's happening. So it has to get done the next month, but at some point it's like, what are we doing here? Just get this done, because the Packers can't do anything either free agency-wise, and the Jets are just kind of in a holding pattern with like 7 different guys.
Well, I do think the final piece of the Robinson article, I think, is spot on, to where the Jets want downside protection. Look, the Packers want upside protection, the 2024 conditions, and the Jets, I think it's fair to say, okay, well, if he doesn't play in 2024, then we want some protections in 2025, of just making it almost like to cancel out. All right, we'll give you a second next year, and then you owe us a third in 2025 if he retires after one season. I think that is the holdup, but I do agree. I think it has to come before the draft. The Packers, I think, want – it's going to be pick 42, the pick they just got from the Cleveland Browns. And I don't think they want to go in not having that. And I get the cap thing, but I think you're seeing from a lot of these teams that are moving on from the vets and kind of realizing they're dead. The Buccaneers did not post June 1 a bunch of guys. They just took all the hits this year. The Rams didn't post June 1. They just took the hits this year. The Vikings, yada, yada, yada. So I think the Packers actually would rather take the big brunt of it now, use that as an excuse. Oh, yeah, we couldn't surround Love with a ton of talent because we could, you know, and then 2024 comes around and you can say, okay, now we can spend and add and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, they're notorious big spenders in free agency.
Yeah, yeah.
It is very clear, not to take a shot at Packers fans, but you guys have clearly not experienced any hard times in the last 30 years, because some of the commentary on Jordan Love, and let's let him play a couple games first before we start anointing him better than 2022 Aaron Rodgers. Like, I don't know, man. I've seen some really bad quarterback play. I don't get too far ahead of your skis here.
Let's just let a Jets and Bears gripe real quick. Like, I don't think they even realize, because trust me, I now cover all the teams. I go on radio and talk to people all over the place. And to me, it's Pittsburgh and Green Bay that just don't get it. It's like, I don't even think Green Bay fans realize like what a good quarterback is. They haven't even had a good quarterback. They've had an elite, incredible quarterback my entire lifetime. Like, Jordan Love could be good, quote unquote good. And that is a massive step backwards from what they just had. And I've never even seen a good quarterback play in my city in my entire lifetime. Like, it's, I get why they don't get it, because they haven't seen it. But yeah, hopefully they experience that soon.
Dude, Jets fans are idolizing Mark Sanchez here in a season where he threw like 300 interceptions, but they went to the AFC title game. So we're like, dude, Sanchez is awesome. Meanwhile, we're like, Aaron Rodgers sucked last year. He had 26 touchdowns and 3,500 yards, 70% completion. Like, relax, okay? It'll be okay. He's won 2 of the last 3 MVPs. I don't think he's that bad, even if you don't like the way he speaks and other things. A couple other topics here. One, what's like the ceiling? I know it's hard. It's not a finished product. And, you know, you're watching some of the tackles now. We can talk about them. The Jets are still likely going to have two top 43 picks. They still have probably 3 or 4 free agency moves. We mentioned Odell, Ben Jones, likely is going to have to add defensive tackle. And then obviously Rodgers coming in. What's the ceiling for this team? Like, is it that unrealistic for me to think if they nail at least one, if not both, of 13 and 43 or 42, whatever, this is a team that can compete for a Super Bowl. Like, I just don't see why that's not possible.
I think it is. I mean, again, we're talking about, like, if you get Aaron Rodgers, even if you get close to 2020 and 2021, so not MVP level, but not last year, like, again, like, I think they had below replacement level play at quarterback last year in New York. And I like Mike White. He's a fine backup quarterback. And speaking of fans settling for little, I went to the Bears Jets game and there was Mike White chance the entire time. That's how, you know, down bad we are as fans. But I do. I think they are. Look, the division is good. The AFC is obviously a friggin' juggernaut at this point, but I think it's not, you know, if you think you're being biased, no, like this is a 12-13 win team if Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, when I post this clip in 30 minutes, I'm sure this will, Jets Twitter will love that one. I just think they beat, you know, they got to beat New England. Like, that's obviously a guarantee, like a no nonsense that has to happen. You've got, you know, bugaboos like Philly and the Giants and things like that of rivalries or teams you've never really beaten before, and the Eagles. But the Patriots do not look great. I think Miami's two biggest concerns are the two guys that get hurt more than like anybody in the league, and Teron Armstead and Tua. And when they don't play, they're not good. And when they do play, they're a pretty damn good football team. The Jets beat them by 30 points last year when those guys didn't play. And then with Joe Flacco and half their team missing and the Dolphins playing for a playoff spot, they still almost beat them. So it's not as if that matchup is scaring anyone on either side. And the Buffalo thing, they beat Buffalo and should have beaten them twice last year with Mike White and Zach Wilson. So like, this team is significantly better, and offensively they're significantly better just by default. But if you get real Aaron Rodgers and, like, you know, you get anything close to 2020, 2021 Aaron Rodgers, like, yeah, 12, 13 wins is not that crazy. And, you know, I saw some reports Gabe Davis is still viewed as a fringe one in Buffalo, which good luck with that, but whatever. I wanted to kind of ask you about some of the tackles here. I know you've gotten into watching a couple of the first round tackles. The Jets have a couple places they could go. I put out the question earlier, and it seems like people all disagree, which I'm actually surprised about. Obviously, if a Jalen Carter gets the 13, that's a whole different conversation. I don't think that happens. I'm just saying they do have a huge hole there, and Quinn Williams and Jalen Carter would be disgusting, obviously. There's the Jackson Smith and Jigba situation where the Jets have a hole at receiver. They don't get an Odell Beckham. Does that intrigue you to reunite those two guys, give Rodgers weapons? And the real big one is, like, you got to protect Rodgers. There's three, you know, blue chip tackle prospects, Skronsky, Johnson, and Jones. Do you like one better than the other three that you've seen so far? Or who do you think maybe potentially fits any of you mock Jones to the Jets in your latest mock draft?
Yeah, I think honestly, they all have positives and drawbacks, and that's not, you know, that's draft analysis, but like both Broderick Jones and Paris Johnson to me, I think are the best tackle prospects in this class. I think they can get beat by bull rushes pretty easily. Both of those guys, they got to get a little bit stronger in their anchor, but both of them in space as run blockers are really, really, really good players. And obviously I think that would be attractive to Nathaniel Hackett in this offense. So I think either one honestly makes a lot of sense from that standpoint. I just think it does make a ton of sense. Like you said, I mean, Dwayne Brown's going to be 37 years old next year. I know Mekhi Becton's posting thirst traps from the gym, but, you know, who knows? Who knows if he's going to be around? It's the fifth-year option decision this offseason. So if they decline, that's due May 1st, so right after the draft. So we might have an indication right away. I'll like say Broderick Jones because I just think – like, I like Paris Johnson. I think he's still unrefined. Obviously played right guard. I think you can see that in his tape a little bit. Both would be great. I will say, like, you know, it's not a guy that's going to come in and be an awesome tackle in their rookie year, in my opinion. I don't think you're going to get that. But I think both could become very good players.
Yeah, look, the Mekhi Becton thing is funny. I'm so happy for him because I think just in general for his own well-being, like, being in really good shape is really good for you. He's giving off the New York Sports Club first joint gym membership of a ninth grade freshman girl in high school, posting every single time they go. But that's not my joke. I'll give the credit to my brothers on that one. It's great to see. I think in an ideal world, Mekhi Becton's a day one starter for the Jets and healthy and looks like 2020 Mekhi Becton. And now all of a sudden, like, Max Mitchell's your swing tackle. You feel much better about where he is. AVT can slot in at guard. You really only have one hole at center there. That's in a much better situation. It's really hard to count on that. So the Jets, although I thought they were going to take a tackle last year, I was pretty steadfast that the Jets were going to go tackle at four. They didn't. So, maybe they feel again, we can kind of patchwork this with other different names. I want to ask you about the Bears quickly, just in terms of their draft stuff, because it does affect very much hand in hand with the Jets. I mentioned, we mentioned the three tackles. We mentioned Jalen Carter. I feel like those are the four names most actively linked to the Bears at nine. Do you think they go tackle or defensive tackle? Just because what they do at nine is going to directly impact the Jets. There's only three picks between them, obviously. And I don't think Houston's going to tackle. So,
yeah, I think the good news for you might be that I think edge could also factor in. I don't know if they're going to be in the Jalen Carter conversation. They obviously they have brought him in. He is literally the thing they need more than anything else in their entire roster. I think he's probably the best prospect in the class if I had to pick one. I like Will Anderson, but I think Carter's frankly better. But yeah, I think it's going to be a trench player. But I guess for you, like, hope it's Lucas Van Ness or something, that, you know, a guy the Jets do not need. I need to watch. I don't have a strong opinion, but people I trust are not as high as some of the stuff I've seen out there. But yeah, so it'll be a trench player, no question about it.
Yeah, if you like bull rushers, sure. But unfortunately, you have to be able to do more than one thing in the NFL. Although I guess you can ask Bryce Huff, because Bryce Huff has one thing better than anybody else in the NFL, and he's going to get paid for it. That's one of the guys I wanted to ask you about. I know, you know, per sources, you know, an extension is being talked about with him. What does that kind of look like? Because I know we've seen other guys. This is like a new niche kind of model. We see in the NBA with the 3-and-D guys, it started to become a thing where these guys started to get paid and get paid pretty handsomely. I'm a Nets fan, so the Nets have every single 3-and-D guy in the entire NBA and nothing else. But that said, Bryce Huff and Josh Uche and these guys that are like, they're really 1.5 down players. They can play against the run, but not, you know, probably not over 17 games. But they are literally the elite of the elite of the elite in pass rush situations where everyone knows it's coming too. It's not like they don't get the benefit of a Nick Bosa, Myles Garrett on first down, getting to pin your ears back. What does an extension look like for him? Because I know the second round tender, I think it's about $4 million or so. I assume he could play on that this year. And it's obviously a big upgrade from a guy who's an 850K a year, you know, a UDFA. That said, I'm sure he's looking for more than $4 million on a 1-year deal. And if the Jets don't give it to him, somebody else is going to.
Interesting. There have not been a lot of recent early extensions. So it's 4.3 on the restricted free agent tender. Like, I thought it would have made sense for Jacoby Myers going into his tender to do it. Darius Williams in LA, they probably just had to spend money elsewhere. But like, we have not seen a lot of those. And back, you know, a couple of years ago, we saw a lot of guys get extended in that position. They are specialists, though. I mean, I'm glad you mentioned Uche. I was going to mention Uche. Obviously, he's like a third round pick or whatever it was. But yeah, you know, because it is so specialized, it's going to be interesting. It's almost like you said, it's kind of a newish thing. Of course, we've had like platoon defensive lines. We've had, you know, pass rush specialists. But like, I imagine it would still be, let's say, double that number. Like, I don't think you're hitting $10 million unless you're either like giving up 4 years. And at that point, it's like, you probably shouldn't do that. Just take like 2 years, 15, and then try to like expand your game, get better, and then really cash in. So yeah, like something like that. Like, I would sign him for, you know, Ogbo Okoronkwo got 3 years, 20 in that range. Like, right around there, or more, I would consider. But yeah, I mean, you know, our numbers think Huff is like the best per-snap player of all time. So I would, you know, like, I would, you know, continue to do that and be a terror and see what you can do with that.
Yeah, look, I will biasly say that I take full responsibility for Bryce Huff breaking out this year. There's two other quick guys I wanted to hit on. One, this is a totally new thing. This is a biased TOJ. TOJ pod name, but a guy like Justin Hardy, I know he's a special teams guy, and it's very interesting how this market develops. It's another niche market. It's a specialist, but he's an all pro and he's coming into a contract year. Like, what do extensions look like for these guys? Because again, they play 20 snaps a game max and it's on special teams, but like the four or five best special teams guys in the country all have, I mean, best in the league. Those teams have one of those four or five guys. You've looked at Slater and these other guys, and the guy from New Orleans, who I can't think of off the top of my head. What does something look like, you know, with that?
They've done pretty well. So there's been a bunch recently. I want to say, like, Frankie Luvu is now a full-time player, but he hadn't got extended as a
Jet
special
legend.
Teamer. Yeah, dude. Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah, he was awesome last year, but like, there have been a bunch of dudes that have done really well in that market. Jalen Reeves-Maben has done pretty well last year. Safety's been blanking on who they are. Like, he could get like $3-4.5 million a year. Like, the teams are now paying more for that if you are one of those premier special teams players. And I do think he definitely falls in that category.
And then last one I wanted to hit on, this is something that was probably the biggest concern of, although if you objectively look at it, it's kind of funny. Zach Wilson being the Jets' backup quarterback to me doesn't feel feasible, especially just being the lock as the backup quarterback. Maybe he wins the job, which would be great. I think he's going to play a gazillion snaps in the Hall of Fame game. I think he's going to play every snap of preseason game one and two. I think the Jets, in my opinion, are probably going to try to move him mid preseason when that cap hit is not quite as bad. The dead cap money and all this different stuff. If I'm not mistaken, like, he's another guy where there's a lot of guaranteed money left and you kind of have to be really dicey with that. Maybe he gets a little value back. Maybe he goes for a conditional three because someone gets hurt and these other things happen. What did the Jets do a backup quarterback? Because they said he's the number two quarterback in the roster right now. Technically, there's only two quarterbacks, which is funny if you actually hear the whole clip. Chris Shelver, I guess, QB1. But you can't possibly have – I just don't see a world in which Zach is just the guaranteed guy and there's nobody else they add to the roster. Like, they either have to draft somebody or sign somebody at this point, I would assume.
I think it's borderline irresponsible. If you're going to make a push, especially if it's going to be a one-year push, you have to have a good backup quarterback. I think teams across the league are understanding that more, but like for me, it's something that like honestly drives me insane. Like if you're going to be one of those go-all-in type teams and you're not going to address a guy that could start four games for you, you know, and Rodgers is incredible about playing through injuries, but was injured last year, probably could have used, you know, more time off. I think he does stay because I'm buying that they really want him to like be Rodgers' mentee and like hopefully still get back on track. Maybe I'm just, you know, buying up a bunch of fake narratives, but yeah, the issue is like selling as low as humanly possible. Like it's literally like the value could not be lower. I agree. It probably would be conditional, but the conditions would be like, he's got to play a bunch. And so realistically it probably turns like a four or a five. And at that point you're, you know, 2 years of a top two overall pick, you're selling for a day three throwaway. I hear you. He should not be locked in as number two. It's a heck of a lot of money for a QB3. You know, Straveler is not a terrible backup, I guess. But no, I think they need to look into like the just a name. But like, you know, we saw Nick Mullins get traded last year. Like we saw some guys with connections to this staff like that like carried some value because teams know they can in a pinch go 2-1 over a 3-game stretch. Like you need one of those guys, in my opinion. Yeah,
not Flacco or Mike White. Oh, guys who won games for the Jets last year. You know, obviously there's a lot to kind of unpack here. And, you know, a lot will change in the next month with the Jets right now. It's just a lot of pretty good hunch that this is going to happen. Hypotheticals, unfortunately, until these guys are locked in, obviously knowing being a Jets fan, I'm sure as a Bears fan, you know, you got to take everything with a grain of salt. Although I will say the confidence with which the smile on Joe Douglas's face, speaking with Janae Coakley on SNY the other night, seemed like a guy who knows this deal is very much about to be done. Again, did like your idea of 2024 maybe being the sliding scale pick. Hey, if he doesn't retire by April 28th next year, it's a one. If he does retire, we get back. It's really only a four or five going to you guys and stuff like that. Do you think that makes a little more sense than the 2025 stuff just because, you know, if you're the Jets and you want this to be a 2-year window, you'd ideally like that to not have to basically not get a pick in return. So make sure you know, catching, you know, Brad's stuff, obviously PFF, Over the Cap. I'm sure there's a million other places you're doing stuff these days. Did do a hit on the Jets team site. So if you didn't check that out, make sure you do. Yeah. You know, obviously appreciate you know, hopping on, taking some time.
I'm still loyal to the TOJ pod, like you let me know that day. Yeah, thanks to Jets for having me, but I was just a tune-up for the TOJ pod.
Yeah, dude, we got they know the deal. You know, they know. It was an opening act for the main performance. But I appreciate you hopping on, guys. We'll be back later this week with another episode, and then obviously anything breaks with Rodgers, you know, hop on here and talk some ball.